Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the age of texting and Twitter, an old art form is making a fresh appearance. It's the haiku. Here's poet Yuko Otomo at a reading last year.
Yuki furite. Snow falls, footprints rise and fall.
Haiku are short, they're immediate, they're witty. They can go deep, fast, in 17 syllables or not, the pros say. Historically, they're in tune with the seasons. Today, they're in tune with the text and the tweet. This hour, On Point, haiku. We're settling in for some old haiku, some digital age haiku, for your haiku. You can join the conversation. Do you write them, read them, tweet them, love them? Give us your best haiku. You can haiku at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Toronto, Canada, is George Swede. He's a poet, haiku expert, and editor of Frog Pond, the Journal of the Haiku Society of America. George Swede, thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Tom.
Just great to have you. And with us from San Francisco is Dylan Tweeney, senior editor and tech writer at Wired Magazine. He publishes the website Tiny Words, which publishes one haiku or micro poem every weekday. And he's writing a column for the Haiku Society of America on haiku in the age of the internet. Dylan Tweeney, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
So let's hear some right off the bat. I hope you've got some classics there. I've got some pouring in from our listeners. It's funny. Talk about Twittering. Here's one from Eileen on Twitter and responding to our call out for haiku. Here's hers. A tweet is a kiss. Be not sloppy or careless. And time it just right. I like that. Not bad. George, what have you got that might be seasonal? A lot of snow around the country today. Have you got anything from wintry haiku land?
I do. I've picked a number of haiku from across the ages, starting with Basho up to the 21st century, all dealing with winter. So here's one.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll read you one by Basho. The Winter Sun. On the horse's back, my frozen shadow. And let's skip ahead to another great classical haiku poet, Busan. Winter trees, the moonbeams tonight penetrate the bones. And here's one that's a little bit more amenable and perhaps humorous from the great Isa, another Japanese classical poet. Mm. Snow melts, and the village is overflowing with children.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I can see that.
Now, a different tone altogether is a contemporary Japanese poet. Well, he's quite old now, born in 1919, but okay. Probably the most prominent haiku poet in the world, Kaneko Tota. Under the girders of the bridge, vomit is stuck. Blooming as winter's blossoms.
Oh, too modern, too contemporary, and he was born in 1919. I don't know what it is now. Dylan, you've got one from Roberta Berry there that showed up on Tiny Words, kind of snow haiku with a very contemporary twist to it, as haiku often have.
Yeah, Roberta's poem is Whirling Snow, Divorce Papers Fall from a Red Folder.
Boom. Yeah. Just those syllables and a whole picture of maybe a whole family falling apart is painted right there. We're going to look at where haiku came from. Dylan, you've been writing about how they never went away, but how they're really, in a way, coming back in our age of texting and tweeting. There's something about this era that seems incredibly amenable, Dylan, to the haiku.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the shortness of tweets and text messages that are sort of in the same length as haiku. Haiku fit very nicely into tweets, and so I think people have started to started to think about haiku again, maybe more than they did before, because there's this medium that's sort of tailor-made for it. But it's not just the shortness either. I think it's the conversational nature of Twitter, where you can kind of go back and forth exchanging short little things, and that actually goes back to the very origins of haiku, where it sort of started out as came out of actually a poetic party game where people would trade verses, and we sort of see that happening again now on the internet through Twitter.
I've played that party game in all places, at the birthplace of Confucius in Chufu in China. Just happened to get caught up in one that would turn out to be a really crazy combination of English and Chinese, of course Japanese too, and now here we are, 2010, and the internet's everywhere. Twitter is everywhere. Here's one from our website from Deborah. I'm not sure if this fits the formal format or not, or if it needs to. 140 characters equal rebirth of haiku. And here's another one from Shannon. It's in Putnam County, Tennessee. First Facebook haiku yesterday about the snow. What coincidence, she writes, listening to On Point today. And one more. I just love this one from David in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. Somewhat embarrassed, while haikuing during work, caught finger counting. Up to 17. You know,
I think even the greatest haiku poets sometimes count syllables on their fingers. I read a story about Shiki, a famous 20th century poet who was, people noticed him counting syllables on his deathbed. So,
and you've got another on that divorce front again. My goodness, library patron with a sour smile, holding divorce for dummies. George,
that's one I wrote some time ago.
Yeah,
yes,
that's great. George, you know, all American school children are taught 5, 7, 5, those syllables and the 17. But I read you saying it's not actually quite as tight a formula as that, and there's a little bit something lost in translation from the Japanese around syllables and numbers and expectations.
That's correct, Tom. The Japanese count syllables differently from us. They see more of them in each word. So for them, a 17-syllable syllable haiku is equivalent roughly to about 10 to 12 syllables for us. So when I try to write haiku, I try to make them shorter than 17 syllables. The shorter, the better, as long as there's some sort of meaning or something happening in that work.
And your second grade teacher didn't, you know, your fifth grade teacher didn't wrap your knuckles for that, saying, no, 5, 7, 5.
Oh, one of my sons got wrapped. When he was 10 years old, he was asked to write haiku with 5, 7, 5 syllables and alliteration in the second line. He refused to do it in class, came back home, and he told me about it, and he said, you write haiku, and you don't do that. And I said, listen, write what you want. What you think is best, imitate me, do whatever you want. He went back to school with 12-syllable haiku,
yeah.
And the teacher didn't like the work, wouldn't accept it. I then sent it off. I sent his poems, about 6 of them, off to Modern Haiku, which at that time had a children's section, and they published 3 of them. Modern Haiku then sent a notification of this to the school he was at and said, you must be very proud to have had one of your students publish 3 haiku in our wonderful magazine.
Oh, dear.
Then the teacher said, oh, my gosh, would you like to have these poems in our yearbook? And my son established his artistic identity and integrity at that point. He said, no, I will not.
But you know, if it's not formal around 5, 7, 5, nevertheless, there is, historically formally, certain expectation of what makes up a haiku. How do you describe that, George?
Well, there have been many ways that this has been described. One of the most common is to talk about breath length. If you can say something meaningful poetically in one breath, then you're getting close to what a haiku is supposed to be. It's supposed to be an instantaneous moment of some sort of insight or recognition or epiphany or something meaningful. It doesn't have to be necessarily dramatic immediately. It can be something that grows on you over time. But the essence of it is brevity, however you want to define it. And
But within that breadth and brevity, that insight you say, and often what they call this kireji, this cutting word, the turn within even that short expression.
That's right. That the kireji is the point at which, after which, comes the connecting line that makes everything sort of meaningful for the reader or the listener.
We've got a lot of haiku pouring in here, and we're going to hear a lot today. George Sweet is with us. He's editor of Frog Pond, the Journal of the Haiku Society of America. He has some great ones published out there himself. Here's one in this wintry time. Dead roadside deer, a snowflake melts on its open eye. And one more while we're in winter. In the howling wind, under the full moon, the snowman, headless. I love them, George. I love them. Dylan Tweeney's with us as well from Wired Magazine. He's writing about how the age of the tweet and the text is kind of ready-made for haiku. We are welcoming haiku from all over today, and there are a lot coming in. Here's one. With Facebook, Twitter, who has time to handwrite on paper anymore? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking today about haiku coming back short and strong in the age of the text and the tweet. George Sweet is with us from Toronto. He's editor of Frog Pond, the Journal of the Haiku Society of America, and Dylan Tweeney at Wired Magazine, a tech writer there, senior editor, also publisher of the website Tiny Words, which publishes haiku or micropoem every day. The great master, of course, great original Basho. Here he is with a little Basho, that famous frog haiku. And this is from just a Japanese lesson. You'll hear it first in Japanese and then in English.
Furu ike ya, kawazu tobikomu, mizu no oto.
An ancient pond. A frog jumps in. The sound of water.
Clearly a Zen master reciting the English there. I don't know. That's pretty great. But then they're all over the place now. Here's Sun, CEO Jonathan Schwartz, and he announced his resignation last year. Things weren't going so well. Sent out a little tweet saying, "Today's my last day at Sun. I'll miss it. Seems only fitting to end on a haiku." Here it was, falling from on high. Here's his haiku. Financial crisis. Stalled. Too many customers. CEO. No more. George, give us another couple of your favorites, if you've got some at hand there.
Sure. Why not one from Allen Ginsberg, who actually published a collection of haiku. And as you know, he had a Zen orientation,
yes.
And so the form appealed to him very much. Here's his winter haiku. I didn't know the names of the flowers. Now my garden is gone. And Jack Kerouac, another member of the Beat Generation, mm-hmm. also published a collection of poetry, much of which included, there were many haiku in this collection. In my medicine cabinet, the winter fly has died of old age.
We all know that.
Those two poets helped popularize haiku during the 60s and 70s. And kept it alive after the war, when there was immediately after the war, there was a very strong interest in Japanese culture, painting, novel writing, poetry, ceramics, the whole gamut of artistic activity. And then the Beats came along and elevated the small form, poetic form, into something special. And it caught the public imagination as well as the imagination of academics.
And boy, is it still going. I love some from your latest issue of Frog Pond. This is the Haiku Society of America. We quoted early Julie Werther, hers from Ohio, Frost on the Mums, My Parents Still Not Speaking. But also Nancy Carroll Moody in Oregon. I love this one. Black Ice on the drive home, you're lying. something's going on there. And here on Maybe on Aging from Robert McNeil in Virginia, again from Frog Pond, Tangled Fishing Line, remembering her childhood, but not her children. It's great. It's great.
Yes.
You know, what makes it not just something brief, but a good haiku, George? What is it?
Well, that's that mysterious intangible found in all art. That moves you as the reader. You try to explain it. You try to put maybe analytical, but you're always going to miss something in your attempts to analyze. There's that magical element that remains elusive. And that's what you seek as a poet, to try to get that magical element into your work. And when you do, you're just delighted. And, of course, when you fail, it's not a good feeling. You think you might have a great poem, and you think you might have that magical element, and you look at that poem a few weeks later, and you think, my gosh, what made me think I'd actually written something with that that magical element in it.
Dylan Tweeney, what do you see coming in with a special flair from the Twitter era, maybe the Twitter generation here? You're sitting there in San Francisco reading from all over the place. What's caught your eye?
Well, I guess I think that you know, that sort of 5-7-5 syllable counting way that haiku is taught in American schools is a little bit of a pity, because that's really the most superficial aspect of haiku, I think. But it's the easiest to grasp, and it's what most people know of as haiku. So a lot of, you know, if you search for haiku on Twitter, probably 90% of what you see will be this sort of 17-syllable thing, which I think is fun. Actually, people like to share that. It's entertaining. There's a lot of humor in that. But it's not, you know, I think a lot of them kind of miss the spirit of haiku, the kind of indirection and the focus on tiny things, or the ability to convey a whole world with, you know, just a few well-chosen words and a great deal of restraint. A lot of that is, you know, you don't see that. So I think people are sort of making their way to that little by little. And you can find that here and there, but most people on Twitter, I think, sort of come to haiku, at least initially, as you know, as they were taught in grade school, and maybe if we're lucky, they, you know, or if they're lucky, they move on.
I'm still real happy with Eileen. A tweet is a kiss. Be not sloppy or careless, and time it just right. I love that. And we've got a lot more coming in. My goodness, here's David. Haikus can be fun, but sometimes they don't make sense. Refrigerator. Maybe that's where they end up. Or here from Shoshobanko. Love these names on the web. Gotta love them. Stripping for the cold, as we amass adornments, trees so unlike us. And from Ken, you and I were friends. Now you're a total crackpot. Thanks so much, Facebook. Or maybe for this morning, from Ben here, it says, coffee and waiting for the neighbor to fire his new snowblower. Joel in Natick, Massachusetts. Joel, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling about an iPhone app called Haiku Time, and it actually generates haiku just based on a vocabulary. It doesn't know what the words mean, but it puts them together grammatically correctly and in a 5-7-5 format.
Okay. Can you got any examples there, Joel? Have you used it? Do you have some?
Yeah, I used a lot. Here's one I liked. Full moon on the path. The wind singing of the sea, the voice of the woods.
And all,
I just made that up.
And it's just an iPhone app, just cranking them out.
Yeah, just cranking them out. Sometimes they're ridiculous, of course, but often they're beautiful, and it raises the question, can there be art without intent? So, interesting.
What would Basho say, George Sweet? Thank you, Joel, very much. Haiku time. Art without intent, Dylan? It sounds vaguely Japanese, or George?
I'm not sure I'd call that art, yeah.
Yeah, well, nobody's saying so, but still the question stands there. Can it just show up?
Well, a lot of my poems arise unintentionally. I might be on the subway, walking the street, and all of a sudden I have these words come in. I pull out my notebook, I write them down, and sometimes they work. And in many ways, you could argue that the app that was just described maybe duplicates the artistic process within us. I mean, you can argue that we're very much electro-biochemical based machines, that the neuronal networks that we establish for writing poetry, we plug into them, and they start to generate words, which eventually sometimes emerge into good poems and usually not very good poems.
Sit us down by a pond, and pretty soon we're Basho.
Yes,
maybe. So you might use an app like that to help get you started then, right?
Yeah. Whatever it takes to crank it up. Let's go to Havertown, Pennsylvania. James is calling. Hi, James. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a singer professionally for many years, and one of my favorite songs in my set list has been Moonlight in Vermont.
Yeah.
And it dawned on me, I think I read it actually somewhere, that the verses are haiku.
Voice them for us a little bit, James, so we can see if we can hear that.
Sure. Pennies in a stream, falling leaves a sycamore, moonlight in Vermont.
Yeah.
And it connects too with the idea of the seasons. You know, you have the winter season, the fall, and the summer, all represented.
Pennies in a stream.
Falling leaves a sycamore.
Yeah.
Moonlight in Vermont.
Sounds like haiku to me. George, will you let it in the door, George?
Oh, sure. That would be an example of a found haiku. There are some poets who will scan through a novel looking for passages that work like the one that was just given. And others will look at longer poems to find two or three lines that work together, that can be pulled out and stand independently. So there are some practitioners of that kind of writing called found haiku, and there's just found poetry in general also.
Boy, it goes in all kinds of directions. I'm looking at a new little book here called Robot Haiku, Poems for Humans to Read Until the Robots Decide It's Kill Time. And just opening up to sort of at random here, this is from a stand-up comic bot. Jokes about humans, they're funny because they're true. Haiku from the robot perspective. Monica in Durham, New Hampshire. Thanks for calling, Monica. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a distant admirer of your show.
Wonderful.
Global warming. This short haiku, I've fallen in love with haikus. I used to write other poetry, but they're so crisp and to the point.
Yeah.
And the other day I was thinking of, yes, global warming and all the snow we have here.
Mm.
And I thought of, this like, young people use a lot this like. Every other sentence is like. Well, there are three different kinds of like. So I used it in this short haiku here.
Okay.
Some like it hot. Weather or chilly. Like global warming.
like.
Yeah, it's three different likes.
So you've got the speech pattern of a generation and maybe the weather or climate pattern of a generation, and they're all at the same time. I love it, Monica. Thank you so much. Keep listening there. Nasser in Boston. Nasser, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. I had a classmate in Pakistan, and he used to write haiku without knowing. And his name was Atar Hussain, and interestingly, he became the police chief of Lahore in Pakistan.
Who knew? The police chief of Lahore writes haiku?
Yeah. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
It's very also interesting that he wrote this particular example is about Japan. He didn't know anything about haiku at that time.
Now, is it going to be in English or Urdu when you read it for us, Nasser?
I'll read in Urdu first.
Okay.
Because you have to get the rhythm, and then I'll translate.
Great.
Okay, it goes like this. कहा जापान को जाओ कहा जापान को जाओ कहा शैतान का डर है कहा शैतान तो होगा.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the police chief in Lahore to your ears, you heard it here first in Urdu. Nasser, thank you. Give it to us in English. What's he got?
Okay. He goes, said, go to Japan. Said, go to Japan. Said, I'm afraid of the Satan. Said, the Satan is going to be there.
I love it. If it makes him happy and makes you happy, I think it's great.
We didn't know what he was writing.
Right.
And we were puzzled. You know, what kind of poem is this? We knew it was poetry, but we couldn't quite see what he was doing. So now, when I came to this country, I read about haiku. I thought, Jesus Christ, this guy was writing haiku.
Nasser, I love it, and I so love that you brought it to us. I'll meet you on that and see you here with one from Basho. Well, let's go. Snow viewing till we tumble. Jesse in Crozet, Virginia. Jesse, you're on the air.
Hi. I live in a very isolated place in the mountains and have had several animals. And this came the other morning. So still this morning, one can almost hear the cat walking on the snow.
Absolutely.
And another one from a...
Please.
A dog walk. On this snowy day, a constellation settles on my black dog's back.
I love it. I love it and can see it. Just that random pattern of flakes on that big black lab or whatever it may be.
Black border collie mix.
Black border collie mix. And Jesse, I mean, here's one of the beautiful things. You sat down this morning and there they were.
Yes. And one other one regarding snow.
Oh, yeah.
The first snowfall came while building a new woodshed, reminding me why.
Yes. Yes, it's great. Jesse, thank you so very much. George Swede, the seasonality is a big deal. Always has been in haiku. Some would say elemental to haiku.
That's true. Some people say you can't really have a haiku without a season word. I don't agree with that, the season word can be very compelling. Anything that indicates a time and place that helps somehow root the words that you're using into something concrete is useful. So, yes, a season word can be very effective, but it isn't absolutely necessary to have a good haiku. There are places in the world where the seasons are not very distinguishable from one from the other.
Maybe
all
Lahore.
Countries, that's right. And all the nations close to the equator, the seasonal changes are very subtle. And it's when you say winter and you're in Mexico and you're writing a winter haiku, it's probably not going to be recognizable as one to someone living in Canada. So... It's a problem. It's very geographical. In Japan, there are definite seasons. You have northern Japan, Hokkaido, mm-hmm. snow-filled place. Mm-hmm. And then you have the south of Japan, Matsuyama. It's like Hawaii. So there you do have a knowledge of seasons, and there you can see why they thought it was an important attribute.
Give us one more, George. I think you've got a winter one from Shiki. This is 1867 to 1902 with some winter moonlight there. Do you have it?
Yes, I do. Shadows of the trees, my shadow wavers with them in the winter moonlight.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about haiku coming back short and strong in the age of the text and tweet with Dylan Tweeney. He's a writer, technology writer at Wired Magazine, but also the publisher of the website Tiny Words. They've got haiku or micro poem out there every day. George Swede is with us from Toronto. He is editor of Frog Pond. It's the Journal of the Haiku Society of America, poet, haiku expert himself. We're going to hear in just a moment from Stephen Ziliak, an economist, professor of economics in Chicago, who thinks a lot about haiku and enjoys them. And man, we've got a lot of haiku coming to people here. Here's Tom in Colorado Springs. Silver halos glow, clouds of down, blanket earth. Here's some geeky haiku from Ray Salemi, who's the robot haiku guy. Who was Captain Kirk? Such a question from children. I blame the parents. I love that. And here, maybe longing for a little summer, it's Gretchen writes to us, snowing in Boston, opened jar of tomatoes, out came Vermont sun. Oh, we like that. We like that. Before we go to Stephen, Dylan, give us a few more from
tiny words and from people who you've seen, you know, pitching them out in this area. You've got a lot of great ones there, Stanford Forrester and Patricia Prime and right on down.
Yeah, well, let me start with Stanford's. He had a haiku published on Tiny Words just last month.
Mm-hmm.
Deep snow, the acorn up to its cap.
All depends how big like you are. What deep as I love it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then this one from Patricia was published a couple of years ago. Hailstorm, tiny white balls bounce on the deck.
I love it. I can see it. Who can't? Yeah.
It's a lovely, lovely image. And a really interesting thing happened with that, which occasionally happens on Tiny Words, which is people can post comments mm-hmm. or responses to haiku, as you can on many websites. And in this case, on Tiny Words, people started posting haiku in response to that one. And then Patricia jumped in, and she posted haiku in response to their haiku. And eventually she and another guy went back and forth for maybe it was over 300, a chain of over 300 haiku
wow.
sprouted up in response.
And there's a Japanese word for this.
Yeah, renga. Yeah. It's people have been doing renga in person for centuries.
Sure.
And in this case, it's sort of spontaneously made the leap to the virtual world. I was really delighted to see that.
Keep going. Give us a little renga, or if not even a continuous chain. I mean, Mike Farley and Ed Markowski there, you've got some great ones.
Yeah, Mike Farley was a rancher in Montana, and I really like his haiku. He passed away a couple months ago, and I never met him, but I felt like I had lost a friend because over the years I'd gotten to know him so well through his haiku. Stolen kisses, barn swallows twitter in the eaves.
A moment of personal history brought back there, and don't we love it? We love it. And Ed Markowski loved this one too.
Yeah, Ed, he's a poet in Michigan. Prairie sunset, the glow of the cattleman's branding iron.
Just great. Just great. I'm going to go to Stephen Ziliak. One call first. Jamel in Somerset, Massachusetts. Jamel, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I have an experience that I always wanted to turn into a haiku, but unfortunately I'm not talented in that way. A few years ago, my daughter and I went by the local pond to check the ice to see if it was frozen.
Yeah.
And she asked me, how does the ice stay on top, Mommy? And I gave her some, I don't know, scientific example, the density of the ice. I couldn't explain it to a three-year-old. She looked at me and said, no, Mommy, winter holds up the ice. And I always thought that would be a perfect line for a haiku, but...
I hear exactly what you heard. Winter holds up the ice. Don't you just want to bring that in at the end of a couple of lines before and have it?
Exactly. So anyone wants to make a haiku of it, feel free.
Winter.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes, please, George.
It sounds to me like the experience you had with your daughter would be a perfect haibun. A haibun is a Japanese term for a short prose piece that includes a haiku. So you could describe what happened, just as you did here on air, and then add, as the concluding haiku, the comment by your daughter. I think it might work.
I'll try that. Thank you.
Absolutely. Or you know what, Jamel? Just write it in some nice calligraphy. Put it in a frame. Put your daughter's name under it, and she'll own it forever.
That's a good idea, too.
Jamel, thank you so much for calling. I want to get to Chicago and Stephen Ziliak. He's professor of economics at Roosevelt University, also a haiku writer and enthusiast, and author of the article Haiku Economics. It was published last year in the International Journal of Pluralism and Economics Education. Stephen Ziliak, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. I'm very happy to be here.
We want to hear how you fit this into your world, but just give us some of your favorites first. There's nothing speaks better than the haiku themselves.
Okay, great. Well, I decided to select for you some haiku that represent haiku economics for me, either in the sense of looking at something in the economy in a surprising way that connects to haiku poets, or the other way around.
You've got one at the top of your list, Stephen, a Basho one, I think, with ears of wheat in it.
That brought
me, you know, three lines, and I was practically at tears on this one, thinking about coming and going and parting. Could you read that one for us?
Yes, I would be happy to. Only ears of wheat to cling to as I pause for a parting word.
only ears of wheat to cling to as I pause for a parting word. And I don't know, I picture there Basho, maybe in his geta, I don't know, some kind of, you know, Japanese shoes, maybe in a, at the edge of a village or saying goodbye to someone, and he's reaching to hang on to something, and all it is that ephemeral ear of wheat sort of waving so lightly in the wind. And that's all in those moments of loneliness or parting.
It's so gorgeous, and it, and yet it burns almost, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. But what's the economics angle there? I'm sorry, I missed the inflation or the, I don't know, the money supply angle.
Well, it's very, this is a thing that's so wonderful to me about haiku, is that it's actually in the first line, only ears of wheat, you know, only ears of wheat to cling to. And so there it is, the economy is playing a role again in our relationships. You know, it could have been a fence that he had to cling to, or it could have been something else. But it was, or it could have been $1 million he was clinging to.
Now that's funny.
No,
the economist,
it was only ears of wheat.
Right, but you go to wheat as a unit of value, an ear of wheat as a unit of value. Whereas I'm thinking of it as a kind of a choreography of nature, the and the you know, the fine little, I don't even know what you call them, those little hairs, fibers that come up, stand up out of the wheat, so you can touch almost like cat's whiskers before you even touch the the stuff that's got value to it. You've got another here with some rice in it from Basho. Great for these times as well. Can you read that one, Steve?
Yes. This one is so nice. I think it shows the idea of simplicity in numerous ways, but at the same time, there's a sadness here, a kind of wabi-sabi, because you're also encouraged to sympathize with people who have very little. So let's see what this one is. Just one possession in this lightly lived life, a gourd of rice.
We have people aspiring to that now and others trapped in that.
Yes, yes. So striking that it's, you know, 350 years old.
How do you use economics in your work, in your teaching? I mean, haiku. Why does it even come into play?
Well, as I explained in a piece I did called Haiku Economics in Poetry Magazine that was published in the January issue by Poetry Foundation, I was teaching at Georgia Tech after the early 2001 recession and especially the tech bubble. And I had 220-some students, engineering, science, economics students, sitting in the auditorium. And, you know, basically my view was that the mainstream economic models weren't able to explain what was going on in the real-world economy. And moreover, they didn't have anything at all to say about the feelings people were having about the economy. So you put those two things together and you feel like, well, the profession isn't really doing its full job here. And, of course, now with the Great Recession, it's the same problem again, and a lot of us are trying to do our best to fix things and turn things around.
You boiled some of that down to a haiku yourself that Adam Smith might have found intriguing.
Yes, that's right.
Would you read that for us?
I started teasing. The short story is that I'd had a previous life with haiku before I ever became a professor. I was a friend of Etheridge Knight, who's a great American poet and haiku writer himself. And I had the good luck of being kind of an adopted student of his because I was his friend. But I never thought that I could put it together with econ, but at Georgia Tech that happened because I was trying to connect their feelings, you see, and trying to bring us all together on this thing, even when there were problems with the economic models.
Sing it for us, economists. Read it for us.
The haiku is... Invisible hand, mother of inflated hope, mistress of despair.
Whew, we can take that one to the bank. maybe that's all we can take to the bank. And your students writing, here's one from one of your students, Rusty LeBlanc. Beyond the skyline, thousands of deserted homes waiting for their turns. And we've got Foreclosure Nation brought all of a sudden fully to us there, and another from a Michelle Fashandi, which has got, yes, it's got maybe a unit of economic value, but also something about human love.
Yes.
A blanket of oats, untouched by the cardinal, singing for his mate.
Oh.
Terrific. You asked the students, and they delivered. Let's go to our listeners. Janet in Brighton, Massachusetts. Janet, you're on the air.
Hello. I am a professor, and I've taught one of my favorite haiku forms is one by Richard Wilbur called A Pasture Poem, and it is actually seven stanzas, each of which is a haiku. And I just wanted to say, and it portrays the life cycle of a thistle in its context, which is a pasture. So it starts with a thistle in spring, and then what happens to it in summer, and then as it dies off in fall, but dies with a purple crown. And the delightful thing about teaching it is that students do notice the toothiness of the language, of the words, and they notice that the first and third lines rhyme in each stanza, but they don't notice that it's haiku form. And so with a little hinting, I when I get them to notice it, they are delighted. So I don't know, would you like me to read it?
Yeah, yes, please, Jenny.
Okay, it's A Pasture Poem by Richard Wilbur. It was published in The New Yorker, which is where I saw it. Seven stanzas. This upstart thistle is young and touchy. It is all barb and bristle, threatening to wield its green jagged armament against the whole field. Butterflies will dare nonetheless to lay their eggs in that angle where the leaf meets the stem, so that ants or browsing cows cannot trouble them. Summer will grow old as will the thistle, letting a clenched bloom unfold, to which the small hum of bee wings and the flash of goldfinch wings will come, till its purple crown blanches and the breezes strew the whole field with down.
Janet, bless you. Bless you. I love that reading, and I thank you very much for it. George Swede, you're a very open-minded interpreter of what's haiku. Are you willing to open the door for those collected stanzas?
Certainly, I could see the haiku element, I think, six or seven times there in those stanzas. Speaking about being open-minded, mm-hmm. Earlier I was talking about 575 and giving the impression that perhaps it was an error to pursue that as a goal in writing haiku. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Dylan said the same. However, I want to point out that you can't, that very good haiku can be written in 575 form.
Sure.
One of the practitioners of 575 only was the famous American novelist Richard Wright,
yes.
Who in the last 18 months of his life in Paris wrote 4,000 haiku, and 817 of them were published in 1998. Let me just read one that speaks to the season we're in. An empty sickbed, an indented white pillow, and weak winter sun.
Oh, yeah. That empty pillow.
I have one more person that should be mentioned that wrote often in 575, and that's Nick Virgilio, one of the American pioneers of the haiku form, who often appeared apparently on public radio in the 1980s. The blind musician, extending an old tin cup, collects a snowflake.
Beautiful, too. I've got one more from a caller, Nick in Burlington. Nick, our time is very short. Just give it to us.
You got it, Tom. Kitchen radio. What's more on point than haiku? Yeah, thanks. We got it.
Nick, thanks. You flatter and mock me, but we'll take it. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Nick. Hey, Dylan, you got a last one there for us? One more for us?
Sure. Let me read one more from Ed Markowski, a recession-themed one, since we were talking about economics.
Yes.
Recession, rising from the factory stacks.
That may be all we get of that one. Stephen Ziliak, how about you? One more?
Okay, one more. Suppose I give you one that I wrote. I published in Poetry. Window reflection. the baby sparrow sitting, listening to glass.
Listening to glass. That's inside the tiny little brain of a sparrow. Dylan, do we have you back? Can you finish yours for us? Give it to us from the top. We lost
yeah,
you
sure,
after that, the no, first that, line for a second there.
Oh, recession rising from the factory stacks. Five small black birds. Oh, that was it?
Wow.
That's the whole thing?
We'll take it. We'll take it. You are all so wonderful to spend this time with us.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's just terrific, and I hope we can bring you back. Listeners, thank you for your incredible effusion of haiku on Facebook and Twitter. And at On Point Radio, how much fun? How much fun is this? George Sweet, editor of Frog Pond, thank you so much for joining us, George. Dylan Tweeny at Tiny Words, and Stephen Ziliak at Roosevelt University. Thanks to you all. Thanks to everybody today. Enjoy the haiku. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.